Hello, everyone, and welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And this is Chai.
This week we are diving deep into another album with an episode of According to a Non-Metalhead, and we have with us again Danielle. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing mighty fine. I'm looking forward to picking apart Rising by the band Rainbow.
I'm very excited as well. I gotta say, when we were waiting, Danielle and I were chatting on Skype, and first off, Danielle, your name on Skype is Danny Poop.
What? I completely missed that.
Her name on Skype is Danny Poop. Danny dot Poop.
Yes, it is. So, I made great decisions for myself in college.
It reminded me of when I was a young lad. My Xbox gamer tag was Dr. Poop.
Okay. I think we were destined from the beginning.
Yeah. So anyway, it made me think of that. But anyway, so Danielle and I were talking on Skype, and you guys are just going to get to hear about this. So we were talking on Skype, and Skype will give you automated replies. So we just were talking to each other in automated replies. So I challenge you.
This is text.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
It was text replies. So it will give you a suggestion of what you should say back to that person. So while you were taking your dog out, Michael, we were just clicking automated replies.
Oh my god!
Like back and forth, and just went in this entire circle. I was kind of losing my mind, actually.
Same.
But one of the responses it gives you is hee hee.
Oh god, stop.
Hee hee.
It's like, who says hee hee anymore?
No one in the world says hee hee in normal conversation.
Wow. Like evil villains, maybe.
Yeah, that reminds me, the Google's texting app on Android phones does automated replies, and they're always like super on point. Like use those
good.
Like 50% of the time.
That's hilarious. These may have been on point if you use them here and there.
Right.
Like for a quick response to somebody. But
yeah,
like, okay,
maybe.
Sounds good.
You
LOL.
Could not have a, yeah. You couldn't have a deep conversation with somebody.
No.
As we proved.
It did throw indubitably though.
Yeah.
Wow. Said,
that was one of the suggestions.
Yeah. And then Ty was like, inconceivable in response.
So anyway, try it out, guys. So much fun. We're so cool. I'm really excited to get into this to this album. We're doing, the band is Rainbow, the album is Rising. A lot of you guys may have not heard of this album before, but it's really well regarded by like metalheads who really know metal, I guess. Like, this is like for fans deep in the genre. Like, you are balls deep in the metal genre if you know this album. And I gotta say, I hadn't listened to it in its entirety until, you know, we started doing this kind of episode, and I had to think about more like, what albums should we do, which albums should we introduce to Danielle. Last time we did Paranoid by Black Sabbath, and that was released like early 70s. This Rainbow album released in 76. So we're kind of trying to do this in a chronological order. So if you're waiting around for like Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and all that stuff, that's coming. That's just going to be in the 80s. And I literally can't wait for her to hear like Rain and Blood.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be awesome.
That's going to be fantastic. Maybe not for Danielle, but for Michael, it's going to be very enjoyable. Yeah.
At first, I was afraid. I was petrified.
Yeah. So, yeah, you'll survive. I got that. It took a second. I was like, where's that from? I was like, that was a weird choice of two things to say, but it makes sense now.
And there was no inflection either, so I'm glad you got there.
So, guys, remember that you can... We are going to have an episode, I promise you. You can follow us on all social media. Just search Super Metal World. Give us a like. Give us a follow. We have a website, www.supermetalworld.com. We got a lot of good content on there. We got other podcast episodes. Last week, we did an episode with Dave Crooks. He is the creator of the indie game Enter the Gungeon. And I got to say, that was a great episode for us. Kind of exploded. And We're happy to talk to Dave. We hope to have him on again. If you haven't played Enter the Gungeon, go play Enter the Gungeon. Check out Dodge Roll Games. Anyway, we got articles on our website as well. Go to iTunes, go to Spotify. You can stream us basically anywhere you'd stream a podcast. On iTunes, please rate and review us. Please give us a 5-star rating. It means so much to us, more than you could ever imagine, to go on there and rate and review us. It iTunes is like life when it comes to podcasts.
Yeah, it's kind of unreal, the imbalance.
It's so imbalanced. And we love you guys. If you're streaming us on Spotify, that's friggin' awesome. If you're streaming us on anything, that's awesome. But please just make the trip over to iTunes just for a tick there, puppet. And give us a 5-star wow. rating. I don't know why that happened. Give us a 5-star rating and write a review. I check almost every day. And I've said this before, but most of the time I'm disappointed. So please, I want that number to bump up. I want the number of reviews to bump up. I want the number of ratings to bump up. Share it with your friends. Good Lord, let's talk about some Rainbow. Horns high.
Horns high.
So as we said in the beginning, we're doing the album Rising by Rainbow. This was released May 17th, 1976. It was recorded in Musicland Studios, Munich, Germany, February of 1976. The length of this album is nice and quick. That's what I really liked about digging into this album. 33 minutes, 28 seconds. Just a quick, lightning quick, but efficient listen. Mm-hmm. The producer is Martin Birch. It is the second studio album by Rainbow. The previous was Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow. Somewhat self-titled album.
Yeah, that's a weird...
That's a weird name for an album.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, like, is the name of the album Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow, or is the name of the band Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow? I was confused by that. You can go check out that album. I heard it's decent, but the second album is like, this was kind of the lightning in the bottle album. This is the one that you would recommend anybody. If you're going to tell them to listen to Rainbow, this is what you'd show them.
Like the true start of Rainbow.
Yeah. So this peaked, not that this matters because these aren't pop albums, but this peaked at number 48 on Billboard 200. I just think it's interesting to know that. And how was this perceived? Well, in the fourth issue of Kerrang! Magazine, which I don't think is a magazine still, maybe it is. This was released in October 1981. Rising was ranked the greatest heavy metal album of all time. But I have to add a caveat to this. People didn't know what the fuck heavy metal was back then.
That's correct. Yeah.
They were still trying to figure it out and define what this genre is.
Right. Today. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, it's a good album just based on that, you know, that ranking. You can assume that there's something to be like... value, there's some sort of value in it, but like you think about the next 10 years from 1981 to 1991, like think about the shit that goes down in those 10 years. Come on.
Yeah, right, exactly. So anyway, just remember that that was in 1981 that it was ranked the number one, but I couldn't find this list. I looked all over the internet for the list, couldn't find it. I did find a list by Kerrang, same magazine. It was released in 1989, and it was pretty laughable, proving that we still... at that time, didn't know what the hell heavy metal was. Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti was listed at number one. And let me tell you this. Although Led Zeppelin has influenced the heavy metal genre, it is not a metal band. Led Zeppelin is not a metal band. Don't let any motherfucker try to talk you into that, because that shit, that shit cray. And I'm serious. And Van Halen was number two. Like, laugh out loud? I literally put that in quotes.
Like, do you remember what album it was?
Van Halen. I think it was literally the one with the Eruption on it.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. That is a solid album. And again, it kind of toes the line, but it's still, Van Halen's not metal. They're not metal. They're closer than Led Zeppelin. And you know, you could almost somewhat lump them in with hair metal. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I've changed my mind on Van Halen as I'm talking. Van Halen has more cred than Led Zeppelin for sure as a metal band. The list also includes AC/DC, definitely not metal. That's as rock and roll as you can get. Aerosmith, rock and roll. Jimi Hendrix. Oh, are you kidding me? Def Leppard did flirt with some new wave of British heavy metal.
Yeah, there's some metal tickling in there.
Hysteria, hysteria. You get me feeling.
Oh, God.
Some sugar on me. When you see me there. Okay, anyway. So they ranked that Def Leppard album. I don't remember if it was Hysteria or Pyromania, but they ranked that ahead of Metallica's Master of Puppets, which today is like, that would be sacrilege today to do that.
Yeah.
Metallica is on that list. Guns N' Roses is also on that list. Again, I don't think Guns N' Roses is metal. You guys can debate me on this. I'd love to debate it, but come at me, bro. You're wrong. In 2017, this album was ranked 48th on Rolling Stone's greatest heavy metal albums of all time. I actually really like this list. We've actually pulled quotes from this list from our past episode with Black Sabbath's Paranoid. It features Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, Black Sabbath, Pantera, Ozzy Osbourne, Motorhead, Iron Maiden, and Judas Priest, all in the top 10. That's a much better top 10 than the one I just described. So yes. The Rolling Stones list, they did a pretty good job. They did a solid job. There's never a perfect list, right? But I think, you know, it's definitely one of the 100 greatest, if you're thinking of it that way. So let's get into some personnel. And then eventually, guys, we're going to talk about this track by track. You have Ronnie James Dio on vocals. Danielle, does that name ring a bell? Yes, rest in peace. Does Ronnie James Dio ring a bell?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
You make me sad.
That makes me sad too, but we'll continue. he is credited with popularizing the metal horns, the rock on, man. I put my horns high. It's why we say horns high. Thanks, Dio. It's the hand gesture in metal culture and was known for his medieval themed lyrics. He's one of the first vocalists to introduce Dungeons and Dragons type shit, Game of Thrones type shit to metal. Dio possessed a powerful, versatile vocal range and was capable of singing both hard rock and lighter ballads. And motherfucking Dio was he's a metal god, first off. He's one of the greatest metal vocalists of all time. He's so good. He was great in this band. He was great and original, filling the shoes of Ozzy in Black Sabbath. And he didn't even fill the shoes. He made his own shoes. And he was also great self-titled as Dio. And also, he was great in Kickapoo, Tenacious D. Check it out. That's one of my favorite performances by Dio. You will form a strong alliance and the world's most awesome brand. Great stuff.
Band.
I don't know what happened at the end there.
Push it a little bit. It was a little.
I don't. My tum tum hurts. he was. Okay, anyway. So he died at age 67. Rest in peace, Dio. He was 5'4".
Wow. He's just a little guy.
He sang like he was 7 feet tall. I added that part.
you just said it.
I know. But speaking of 67, I have to mention, guys, that this is episode 69, and I just have to point that out.
Hey,
just a fact, no context around that at all. Nope. What an interesting fact. We're almost 70 episodes in.
We are, and I just wanted to point that out. On guitar, you had Richie Blackmore. He founded Deep Purple. Deep Purple is the band that you would know that did Smoke on the Water, which is literally the dan, 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 dan. That's literally the first riff that most guitarists learn. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of Deep Purple. He's also known to be an asshole. So that's that. Yeah. He's now 73, still alive and kicking. You got Tony Carey on the keyboards. You got Jimmy Bain on the bass. Cozzy Powell on the drums. I'm saying this all because God love them, but who the fuck knows who they are? you got Munich Philharmonic. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was his name.
You're trying to say someone's name? Munich Phil?
I was like, what a strange name. You have the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra. They do the strings and the horns on this album. You got Fritz Sonneiter. He's the concert master. And Rainer Peitsch. He's the conductor. Wow, I should read that beforehand.
Munich Phil.
I was like, yeah, what a cool name. Munich.
Munich Philharmon?
what a cool guy. Munich Philharmonic Orchestra. And you can call me Muni.
You could call me Muni.
Track listing. All tracks were written by Richie Blackmore and Ronnie James Dio. Side one, if we were viewing this as a vinyl, is Tarot Woman. Then you got Run with the Wolf and Starstruck. Do You Close Your Eyes? Side two is Stargazer. And A Light in the Black. So, as far as how was this critically received at the time, critical acclaim across the board. Everybody has loved this album when it came out. Everybody loves it now. And there is more legacy things to talk about with this album. But we will get into that later, because I think I want to get right into the tracks here. So, let us talk about Tarot Woman, the first track on the album. Michael, let's start with you first. Let's hear your thoughts on Tarot Woman.
So the album as a whole, because I'll be honest, I had never heard this album, never listened to it prior to, you know, over the last like week, I've been basically listening to it nonstop. But prior to, actually, I don't even think I've heard any of the songs on this album, which, you know, whatever.
And I think that's good though, because, you know, you're still a metalhead.
Right. So just a context about the song. The song is about a man that visits a tarot reader and discovers his fate. And I dug the, I mean, I think for the most part, as I'll get into for most of the songs, like I was a little uneasy about almost every song on this album the first time I heard it. Like I was like, it might be like a styling thing. Like I'm not huge into like traditional heavy metal. Like I don't really dig into Iron Maiden or Judas Priest like a lot of other people do. But the more I listened to it, the more I started to enjoy it. And this is one of my favorite, this ends up being one of my favorite tracks on the entire album.
Mm-hmm. The power of Dio took over, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously anything Dio touches is great. So it opens up with this cool keyboard solo, and everything in this song is pretty catchy. The really catchy chorus, beware of a place, a smile of a bright and shining face. Really good solo. You actually get, I know we talked about this in the last episode with you, Danielle, you were looking for like, when can we expect some like harmony in metal? And you definitely get it right away in this track. Maybe not right away in the track, but the solo has like dueling harmony bits, which is which is great.
Yeah.
Take it away, Danielle.
Yeah, harmonies is one of the first things I noticed vocally, especially. I was so excited. I was like, I wrote in my notes, OMG, Michael, there's harmony. I was so excited because I'm like a sucker for a good harmony. Also, as I mentioned in the last episode, I'm a sucker for a song one. Like, I want song one to come in really hard and really fast and tell me what's up. And this song, until later in the album, was my number one for a long time, until I got to a later song, which we'll discuss later. But this song just comes in so hard and fast. And I loved this song. This was like, I actually really loved this whole album. So I'll just put that on the record. I had a lot of fun with it. I like the video game sounds and stuff was super dope. I will say it did get a little repetitive towards the end for me, where I was like, I wrote in my notes, I'm on electric solo 3 of 3. Can I please have a break? Like so many solos happening. But it was super cool. And I was like, I think I just expect I don't know why, but when you guys give me an album, I expect that it's going to be super hard. And like, maybe the ones later will be hard. I shouldn't like probably get too comfortable with the fact that the two albums so far that we've discussed haven't been super hardcore yet. But I was like, had no idea what to expect because I'm not allowed to research anything, which was killing me on this album, by the way. I wanted to research everything and I didn't, of course, because I'm not allowed to. But I was so pleasantly surprised when stuff started coming in, and this guy can freaking sing. Like, his vibrato is out of control. His vocal range, like the notes he's hitting, is out of control. Like, I'm a vocalist, so I'm like, he's like kindred spirit. Like, I was like, give me more vocals. This guy is so insane. I was so happy with it. And I kind of was writing notes as I went, and I was like, is this lengthy electric intro really necessary? And then I was like, yes, it is, because it drives so hard. I was like,
yeah,
I was in it. It was a really good introduction to the album for me. And this is my second favorite song on the album still.
Well said. You know, this is a righteous song, and I'll get into this later. But this really adds the – so with Black Sabbath, we got a lot of the gothic, gloomy elements of metal.
Mm-hmm.
With this album, we get a lot of the things that make metal a little more uplifting and righteous and fun and fantastical. So I think it's such a, like, contradiction of styles that I wasn't entirely familiar with its album coming into it. I love Dio. If you're a metal fan, you know Dio, and that's what he goes by. Not Ronnie James, not Ronnie. He's Dio. He's that big in the metal world, and I'm obviously, God rest his soul. But the man can sing, and that main riff, that like that's a great metal riff. That's a prototypical metal riff, and we are in the primordial stages of metal still. I think this, like, to me, the 70s were metal. Like, if we're talking about don't come at me with evolution stuff, but if we're comparing it to evolution, it's like when the little living being comes out of the water, you know, and you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, this is that stage for metal. It's like it's forming in the primordial ooze, and it's like getting its legs to walk on ground and declare itself, I am metal, hear me roar. So...
Yeah. No, I got you for sure.
It was awesome. The contrasting styles of just comparing this, because we did Paranoid previously, I just had to compare it. And while Ozzy has a style, Dio is a far superior singer, you know? That's just that. But the part where it's like, beware of a place, a smile of a bright shining face, like the whole thing is like super catchy. And even just the tarot woman, I don't know. You're just like, I don't know either, but this is awesome. But this is definitely one of the best on an album that I'll hold my final take on the album. I'm not going to reveal it yet, but one of my favorites for sure. Danielle, was there a moment on this track that you wanted us to play?
Yeah, I like the pre-chorus and the chorus is just so strong. And towards the end, when he just starts vocally going off, like he's like doing these runs and like full out belting is out of control. So like the last pre-chorus chorus is super strong, probably my favorite part of the song.
Yeah.
All right, I try to put some tidbits in between the tracks here. So a couple tidbits I got for you guys. These are Metallica related. Kirk Hammett was inspired by Ritchie Blackmore's guitar tone on the Rainbow Rising album. And Metallica even covered a handful of songs on their track entitled Ronnie Rising. This was featured on a tribute album to Dio after he passed away. And Metallica's medley includes Stargazer, A Light in the Black, and Tarot Woman. It's an excellent medley done in Metallica's unique style. So go check that out. Pretty interesting the way they mesh up all those songs. Let's get into a little Run with the Wolf. Danielle?
Yeah, so Run with the Wolf was a little bit of a change from song one. Actually, I'll address this now. One of the things that I struggle with this album as a whole is I'm a person who likes to emotionally connect with what's being sung on an album or in a song. And I felt like for most of this album, I wasn't able to do that. It was a lot of storytelling.
You didn't want to run with the wolf?
No.
I emotionally connected with that wolf. Go on.
Right. Well, I'm not Remus Lupin, so I just felt like it was, it was beautiful storytelling, which I think a lot of this album is. It's really beautiful storytelling. I love good imagery. It's really good world building, and I feel like the scenes are very clear. I just don't know where I fit in the story. I think this is more of an outside looking in from a listener perspective album when I prefer to feel like I am the first person. Like I can relate to what the person's talking about or singing about. So
Dio, that was good. But do you think Danielle could put herself in this track?
Is that you in like the control room while they're writing?
That was me being Ritchie Blackmore. I don't know. Like, I like the lyrics there, but do you think the listener? No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, Danielle. It's totally, yeah. It's definitely not a, it's not something that you can necessarily listen to. I think you can emotionally connect to it, but I think the emotions are a little bit different. But yeah. I'll get into that. What more about Run with the Wolf, or was that all you had?
Yeah, no. I think his vocals on this track are like crazy good. He was giving me like the way that he was like reaching for the high notes with like such passion was like giving me like Shirley Bassey, like Ella Fitzgerald vibes, just like strong soul vocals.
Who are those people to our listeners? They probably won't know.
They are incredible female black singers. Of like the 50s and 60s era, both powerhouse vocalists. Shirley Bassey did Goldfinger from James Bond Goldfinger. She did the title track of that. And Ella Fitzgerald did literally Summertime, tons of really big hits of that time. And I was so just like pleased with his vocals on this track. I'm pleased with his vocals on the album as a whole. There's a repetitive hook, which is kind of nice because it gets stuck in your head. Also, there's a bar in the town I live in called Tradewinds, which Ty has walked past and heard before. And as soon as I heard this song, I was like some dad band would 100% be playing Run with the Wolf. And I'd be like, oh my God. but I liked it. I mean, it's one of my least favorite songs on the album, but it was all right.
Michael. Is the catchy bit you're talking about when Dio just, when he sings to run with the wolf.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's to me, the one part of the song that I always remember. And it's just like, that's just classic Dio. Everything about that line from like the delivery and the lyrics, you know, it's very like Man on the Silver Mountain-esque.
Oh yeah. This is like Man on the Silver Mountains, like the predecessor to it.
Yeah. Very much in that vein. I wasn't quite sure, like, is this song like literally about like running with the wolf? Like I was trying to like figure out
like, is there a deeper meaning behind it? Maybe, maybe not. Right? I know I was like looking and I was reading through some people's suggestions about like, is it about maybe the end of the world and accepting the end of the world when they talk about a hole in the sky, something evil passing by, what's to come when the siren calls you go to run with the wolf. Those are like the pre-chorus chorus lyrics. So I don't really know. I couldn't quite nail that down, but the slower paced, catchy, bluesy riff is certainly to my taste. I enjoyed this track.
Yeah, this this from a standpoint of being a fan of guitar and being a fan of just vocal delivery, this was one of my favorite on the album because it is so catchy. You know, the run with the wolf, dan it, nan 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 nan, like that is just pure like guitarist. Like if you're a guitarist, you love this track because of that main riff.
Yep.
Because you want to write a riff like that. It's groovy. It's a hip shaking song. Like you could dance to this song. Not saying that you could grind to this song. Or you can't. I mean, you can maybe twerk to it, but run with the wolf. Anyway.
I'm out.
It's like that Homer Simpson meme where he's sinking into the bushes.
Yep.
That's me right now.
I understood this track to be like running free where life takes you. You're just kind of running with the wolves because wolves run free and they, you know, they don't give a shit. You know, they don't think about it.
Yeah.
So that's what I was considering it to mean, but I'm not, you know, I'm not the be all end all of what this song means. This is more of a rock orientated song, but yeah, Dio's delivery vocally is stellar, and
so
he is what pushes it into the metal category for me. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what was your favorite moment of this song, Danielle?
Yeah, so the pre-chorus and the chorus, like Michael said, they just slap. Like, they're so strong, especially the pre-chorus and chorus after that first electric solo are when he's just, like, going for those high notes and, like, riffing. I loved it. So pre-chorus and chorus for sure.
All right, here's another interesting tidbit. This was from Metal Hammer issue 186. Did co-founding Rainbow with ex-Deep Purple guitarist Richie Blackmore in 1975 teach you a lot, good and bad? This was asked of Dio. Dio says, "Oh, absolutely. Richie was an extremist. He was either completely pissed off at you or he liked you. There was little room in between. Luckily, he was never really cruel to me, but it taught me a lot about personalities. I tried never to do that." So Richie's a hard guy to work with. And their next he tried to go more in a pop direction after this album because, as I'll read in another quote, he wasn't happy that it wasn't getting played on the radio enough, which we all know that's always great motivation for writing an album.
This was Richie?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So he wanted to push it in more of a pop direction. He didn't think the album was getting played enough.
So he initially actually left Deep Purple because he thought Deep Purple was becoming too funky, which I find kind of ironic.
Yeah, and then he basically pushed the band into a more pop direction, and their other albums weren't as memorable. But hey, that's what happens when you go pop. Just kidding.
Wow.
So we got one more quote from that issue, 186 of Metal Hammer. "You've retained your voice while others younger than you have lost theirs. How?" "I take care of it, and I know how to sing." For you guys out there wondering why I'm not doing an impression, I don't really know what to do for Dio. He's an American dude from the East Coast. And I'm really bad at East Coast, like, Boston accents. I thought about doing a Boston accent for him, but I can't. So sorry about that. "I take care of it, and I know how to sing. I have great technique. I was given a good voice in the first place, but I have the brains to know how to use it." Yes, you do, Dio. Thank you so much. And his voice did stay solid throughout his career. There was never a point where people were like, "Man, Dio's losing it." And that's pretty impressive. So let's get in to track number 3, and that is Starstruck. I'll tell the story behind this song, and then I'll let Michael talk about his thoughts on it.
Perfect.
So this is a true story about a female fan who would follow Richie around everywhere, Richie being the guitarist. She was a French girl named Muriel, that's hard for me to say, who would turn up in Richie's bushes around his house. She was annoying to Richie and an obsessed fan, and the first one I'd ever experienced. So I wrote the song from real life perspective. The last time we saw her was at a show in Paris. She was pressed right up front, and Richie smashed his guitar, and the neck flew across the stage and smacked her right between the eyes. She went down like a ton of bricks. Hope she wasn't hurt too badly. So he didn't do that on purpose, by the way.
I hope she wasn't hurt too badly.
Yeah, I hope she was hurt a little bit. So it's about an obsessed fan, and I think this puts this song in a lot of perspective. This was taken from Ronnie James Dio in the liner notes of the compilation Stand Up and Shout, the anthology. Michael, what do you think of Starstruck?
With Starstruck, I immediately note, you know, there's obviously like the tempo upswing now from Run with the Wolf. And I found that the chorus, or the chord progression of this riff as it moves from like the pre-chorus into the chorus is just like outrageously catchy. And the, like, I don't know what it is, but like Richie Blackmore, is he just like an underappreciated guitarist or something? Because as far as like songwriting goes, like every single one of the songs on this album are like incredibly catchy. Like there's so many good hooks.
I don't think he's under, I think he's, you know, he's probably is a little underrated, but I think he's very much appreciated by people in the metal and hard rock community, but especially the metal community. I mean, I've heard Kirk Hammett talk about him a lot.
Okay.
So yeah, he definitely inspired, many great guitarists after that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's just like, maybe it's just like a, I don't know, some gap that I missed. I guess I've never listened to this album before, so Richie Blackmore, it's reasonable that I would just miss his existence entirely. But the pre-chorus, how it goes, "just creeping like a hungry cat, I've seen it before, I know it can mean that," like, love it. So yeah. Good. Like
that's my favorite line, "creeping like a hungry cat,"
and the way like the way Dio delivers it is just, it's just stanky.
It's so good. It's so good. Nobody else can say that line and not make you want to laugh at them. But I'm like, yeah, she is creeping like a hungry cat. Like, just believe what he's selling you.
Yep. So this song, again, like a lot of the songs on this album, grew on me. And now this one is definitely one of, I think for me, this is the catchiest album or catchiest song on the album.
Agreed. And, agreed. I agree with that.
And it's one of my favorites. For sure.
Danielle?
It's my least favorite. and not necessarily for any particular reason. I just didn't, this song didn't strike me as much as the other ones did.
It didn't starstruck you.
No, it didn't starstruck me. I feel like it is almost in last place simply because the other ones were higher. You know, it's not like I knew, like, you know, it was going to be last place from the beginning. It just kind of happened. I feel like there's a repetition to it, which can be catchy, and also it can get a little repetitive. I felt like it was catchy at parts, and then I kind of wanted it to move on to the next song already, just because I think I'd had such a good experience with the first two songs. But I definitely got the crazy fan vibe immediately, and that was really nice, actually, for a change, because this album toys so much with telling a story and then also putting the narrator or the writer in the story. Like, I go back and forth on, okay, is this storytelling, or is this first person perspective? Is this something they experienced, or is it something they've like dreamed about or like made up? But this is a song that I felt like pretty clearly what I knew what was happening, that there was like a crazy fan girl, like stalker fan, and he was just telling the story of that. So I liked that aspect, that I knew what was going on. Like I said before, I like to, you know, have a clear story for me, like what's up. So that was nice, but it definitely wasn't my favorite.
So catchy, infectious, to the point. The lady starstruck, she's nothing but bad luck. I kind of just echoed what Michael said, so I have nothing new to add. What part of this song are we playing?
I think like that last pre-chorus into the chorus, she's creeping like a hungry cat, just through the end of the song, is crazy good. Like his vocals, anytime his vocals go off, I'm like in, and he just goes off at the end of this song. So I think I might say pre-chorus, chorus every time, but he just goes in there. She wants a souvenir, to everyone it's clear. She is hooked, one look. She wants a photograph, and everybody laughs, ha, but not me, cause I see.
So apparently Dio had a habit of writing songs while watching sports on TV. That's like what he primarily was doing. And I think that's interesting, because something I forgot to mention about Run with the Wolf is it remind me so much of something that would be in a Rocky movie, like a Rocky montage. Okay. Just like Rocky, like training, and it's like Run with the Wolf. And he's like running up stairs and he's running downstairs, and
he's like running with his pet dog or something.
Yeah, and that old trainer, like, you gotta do it, Adrian. They're waiting on you. He doesn't think you can do it. They don't think they can beat you. Nobody can beat you. They don't believe in you, Rocky.
I just gotta run with the wolf. Hey.
You're damn right you run with the wolf. You take the wolf, you hop on it, and you run with it. So, anyway.
Yikes.
Woo! That's
Adrian.
So,
got room with the wolf.
Adrian! So that's kind of what that song reminded me of. Anyhow, I haven't got to the quote yet. Let me do that. this was from earofnewt.com. Go check out Ear of Newt. Do you still write songs while watching sports on TV? I do, yeah, I do. All the albums that I've done, I think I've been watching some kind of sporting event, and only because it really relaxes me. There's no music in the background, and I love athletics anyway. And it's kind of my fantasy. I always wanted to do or excuse me, to be a great sports star. And so I'm writing about fantasy things while I'm watching my fantasy. So it all works for me. That's interesting, isn't it?
Hmm.
Yeah. I wonder what, do you know what sort of sports he was into?
Oh yeah. His favorite is basketball, but I think he watched a little bit of everything. So he's also 5'4". So it's definitely his fantasy.
never going to happen. Sorry.
It was definitely Dio's fantasy. Oh,
So would he be like a Celtics fan? Maybe a Knicks fan?
I don't know. That would be a good thing to look up. I'm not sure. We'll have to Google that. Maybe we'll have that for you guys in between tracks here.
Was he from Jersey?
I thought he was from Jersey. Again, guys, we'll get you that update after we play this next track. Do You Close Your Eyes is the next track. Oh, yeah. Michael, you talked about the last one. So, Danielle, do you close your eyes? I wasn't asking that as a question. you just talk about the track.
Great. this song was catchy. I really liked this song.
You would. You would.
Yeah. There's some one part that's questionable. And I'll get to that in a second. But I mostly was feeling like I have so many notes about, like, yes, girls are goddesses and you should appreciate them. Like, I loved that he was just like, saw this girl and was like, she's shrouded in mystery. And it's like, I'm going to go tell her what's up and that I'm interested in her and whatever. This song was super catchy and cool. I went back and forth between feeling like, yes, women should be appreciated because they're magical. And then he says, do you close your eyes when you're making love, which is already kind of like weird. And then says, making sweet love to me. And I wrote, I'm going to go on the record and say that if a man ever approached me and said, do you close your eyes when you're making sweet love to me? He would no longer be able to father children. So there's that. But
I think you're taking that line literally. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't think he went up and literally asked her that.
No. Yeah. And I said, I'm hoping this is something that something he's just made up in his brain and not something that he would actually do in real life. And he only says it once. He doesn't say it again in the song.
Yeah, it's so just like on the second chorus or something.
Well, I was going to say, I think that's like when he says, like, to me, you know, like he hits a high note. So I think that was like his little twist on the
yeah.
delivery.
Yeah. This dude can like sustain a note. Like when he comes in that first chorus and holds love out for what feels like a minute, I literally said, oh my God, out loud, because this dude can sustain like it's his job. And it is his job. It is unreal. Like the vocal capability that this dude has. So yeah, definitely a great song for me. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Michael?
This one for me sticks out as probably my least favorite song on the album.
I knew you were going to say that.
So the pre-chorus riff is great, and the pre-chorus like vocals are awesome. Dio's, it's the one where he's like, I see a glow around you. Like that, that whole bit is really great. The pre-chorus riff is really great, where it's like down, 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 and then it's like these little trill things that are happening on the guitar. But for me, it like kicks into the chorus, and I wanted it to like catch into this better hook, and it just like the vocals in the chorus. All the lyrics are just, do you close your eyes? Do you close your eyes? Do you close your eyes? And it's just like, it didn't quite catch the way I wanted it to after coming out of this righteous pre-chorus.
I agree that so I like this whole album, don't get me wrong. And I think this is a fun song. I'm all about this song. It was also my least favorite only because I think it sounds somewhat like an AC/DC song. This is the most like pop rock song on the album. Like the dan-er-nat, 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 nan-er-nat. I was just waiting for like Brian Johnson to come in or something. You know, I was like,
Wait, even the way Dio comes in where he's like, ooh, no, 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 no.
Yeah, right. So this was like them to me, like flirting with like some AC/DC territory. But it's a groovy song. It's a good riff. Like I said, it's fun. The lyric I wrote is, you know, he's singing about a girl who is slinky, cool, and nobody's fool. I thought that was pretty empowering for the time. You know, he's like, she's not anybody's fool. She's slinky and cool, you know. So I thought that was kind of, I liked that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't really understand, and maybe you guys out there can tell us, or maybe you don't care. I don't know, like, I don't get it either if he's, like, thinking in his head, like, I wonder if she closes her eyes during intimacy, or, and he's just, like, fantasizing about it, and he's like, yeah, I wonder if she closes her eyes. I wonder if she closes her eyes when she's making love to me. And it's, like, in his head, you know, like... You know, like, that's the way I want to imagine it, because I love Dio and I don't want Dio to be viewed as a certain way. So, but I don't know. I don't know why he's wondering that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something about that? Is it weird to, it's, I don't know. Anyway, somebody inform us if they know why Dio would be wondering that in his head.
There was this weird interpretation of this song that had to do with, like, people closing their eyes to their own faults while, like, calling out others, which I thought was interesting. I didn't put much, like credit into it, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm, but, like, I thought it was maybe an interesting take on the meaning, like, of the song. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, like, some deeper double meaning. Or
yeah,
it
right,
sounds
right.
It sounds like a bit of a stretch, but you never know.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think, like, I'm guessing that, you know, opening your eyes during intimate moments, like, is it more intimate to open your eyes or not? I think you usually want to close your eyes when you kiss somebody, right? You're not staring at each other in your face while you're kissing them.
Right.
So maybe he's imagining, like, I wonder if we were intimate together. Cause I'm imagining he's fantasizing about her. And he's like, wow, here's this slinky, cool girl who's nobody's fool. And, I'm going to fantasize about her. And I wonder, like, if we got to that point, if she would close her eyes or if she'd open them, like, would we have the chemistry that she would just keep her eyes closed? Cause it'd be super weird if we were staring at each other. I'm going to get off this topic cause I feel like I'm digging myself a hole. Let's, Danielle, what part of this song do you want to play?
Yeah. So on brand, that first pre-chorus and chorus, is so catchy and so gripping, and when he holds out love, like I said before, I literally screamed. It was so good. So I'm like, how many times can I say that this dude can sustain a note? But he really can. So definitely pre-chorus chorus.
Musicians Rob Halford of Judas Priest and Snowy Shaw, who was in various bands like King Diamond and Dimmu Borgir, described it as a masterpiece and pretty much a milestone, saying that it introduced a more Dungeons and Dragons type fantasy heavy rock to the masses. That sentence is hard to say.
This is the album as a whole, right?
The album as a whole. It's a milestone. And I agree, like, for all those reasons I said, like, Black Sabbath certainly gave us the gothic, doomy, sad, melancholy things, and even horrifying things that metal can be. And I think this album's a little more upbeat, uplifting, fun, righteous, and fantastical. According to AllMusic, Rising captured Blackmore and Dio at the peak of their creative powers. It chronicled both the guitarist's neoclassical metal compositions at their most ambitious and the singer's growing fixation with fantasy lyrical themes, a blueprint he would adopt for his entire career thereafter. So this album made Dio. And of course it did. He kills this album. So let's get to the penultimate song. And that is Stargazer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll let you start.
So we were just talking, or you were just talking about all of the fantasy elements. And I think this has got to be like really where it comes through. Like this song
definitely
is about a wizard who wants to build a tower so that he can fly. Like that's pretty straightforward fantasy type stuff. This song is the bee's knees.
Mm-hmm.
Most certainly my favorite song on the album.
It's so fucking good.
The centerpiece of the album. It's a slow grinder of a song. It's definitely got this doomy vibe to it. Like it's none of the other songs on this album feel like a doomy Black Sabbath song, but this one definitely has those sort of vibes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the chorus lyrics I'll present to you here. I think the chorus is really great because it like sums up the entire story of the track.
Yeah.
In just a quick little snippet. So the chorus lyrics are this: in the heat, in the rain, with whips and chains, just to see him fly. Too many died. We build a tower of stone with our flesh and bone to see him fly, but we don't know why. Oh, now where do we go? So many great nuances to this song. It's got a righteous solo, and mm-hmm. I found this, the solo has a, because it's a song about a wizard, it has like this mystically spellcasting vibe, much similar to Taino. We've talked about this before, the intro to Megadeth's Five Magics, how it sounds like a spells are being cast or like primed and ready to go. It's
yes.
kind of the solo has this sort of vibe. You get like a phaser effect kind of introduced as the solo goes on. Man, love this song. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah. Danielle?
It was also my favorite song on the album.
Hey, you agreed. You both agreed.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, look at me go. And like, I'm sick
of
that.
Give Michael no credit for agreeing. Look at me go. Get in the corner, Michael.
I'm like sort of shocked at myself, honestly, because when I saw that this song was 8:27, I was like, but I loved every second of it. Well, you know, there's some solo action happening that could have been shorter sometimes, but I felt like there are so many things to feel about the song. Let me just try to start at the beginning. I have so many notes on this song. I also loved the chorus, Michael. I'm so glad you read that, because I wanted to read that too. As soon as he started the song, you're immediately transported to where he's taking you, right? Like you're in a desert space. All these people are just slaving away in this horrendous elements, trying to build this, you know, tower for this wizard or this pedestal, whatever. And I immediately was transported to like the Egyptians, mm-hmm. Or the Israelites being slaves in Egypt. And I was thinking of this, like the song Deliver Us at the beginning of The Prince of Egypt. So that was a whole other trip I took. But I was immediately transported to just like people just slaving away in just horrible conditions. And another thing that I really liked about this, besides just the vivid imagery, is certainly this song is telling a very specific story. Like, Michael, I think you condensed it super well. But also, I feel like for me, there was a lot of takeaway. There was a few different ways that I could apply this to like a real life situation. And I could like glean some wisdom from it, or like real life application from it. And the two things that stuck out to me were, first of all, there's something to be said about a two-party political system where we put our faith in a person to be all the things that we want them to be, and we have so much hope that they're going to sacrifice their own agenda in order to do what's best for our country. And most of the time it doesn't happen because people are imperfect. And I think we're so quick to put all of our faith in one person and what they stand for, and sacrifice ourselves or our own morals or things that are important to us along the way. So that was definitely a takeaway of like, one person can't be everything you want them to be. And you can't put a person on a pedestal and expect them not to fall. Cause in this song, the wizard falls, And everybody's going to, because we're all imperfect. And I think there's another personal takeaway is, like, spend your own time building up your own pedestal and building up yourself, because people are going to fail you, and you don't want to spend, you know, so many years of your life trying to build up another person. Like, for me, I find myself in a role a lot of being a supporter, and I get behind people and I make them strong, and I have a hard time personally being in the spotlight and really building myself up and the things that I believe in. So I just was, like, going on for paragraphs about how much this song meant to me, because it certainly tells a beautiful story, but I also feel like it's a really good message to not put all of your faith into another person, but really to put faith in yourself. So anyway, on an emotional level, that was really important to me. On a musical level, the strings in this song, like, were bananas, crazy good. I felt like, when I first saw that the song was 8:30, like I said, I was like, are you kidding me? And then I was like, nope, JK, I will take 13 hours of just the strings, because the way that song ends is like, it was like a requiem, or like a, just like this beautiful, just like amazing orchestral, beautiful composition that I listened to a million times, because it just resonated with me so much. So I had a great time listening to this song, and this is also my, like, number one favorite song on the whole album.
I don't know how to follow that up.
You can't, it can't be done.
you've left me in quite the situation. So I will do the things I am good at, which are make noises with my mouth hole. The main riff, I love it. So metal, so awesome. Like, it's simple, but it's just like, that's some prototypical metal shit right there. It's just crazy how, like, we've been listening to these early albums and you're like, oh, like, I've heard that kind of riff before, you know, like, that's where it came from, you know? Mm-hmm. How that influence just, like, travels generations. It's insane. This is hands down the best song on the album. It tells this epic and grandiose tale, that many metal bands would follow this formula of telling an epic tale like this and making the songs long, but not only making them long, but, the good bands can make a song long, but not make it feel long, you know, and fill it with, productive space, I guess.
Yes.
So that's what this song really accomplishes. And I'll read to you guys. I did a little more research on just kind of the meaning, the story and the meaning of the song. Cause we told a little bit, both of you told a little bit. I'll read the whole thing. So this is the start of the epic tale of a wizard who believed he could fly. People believe in the wizard and are enslaved in order to build a tower in harsh conditions in the desert so he can fly, during which many die trying to build this tower. When the tower is finally erected, the wizard climbs the tower only to fall to his death instead of flying, and the slaves feel lost until they see a rainbow rising, which is where you get the album title. And they see that on the horizon. This then leads into the final song in the album, A Light in the Black, in which they refine their purpose after a light in the sky appears. And another way to interpret this, which I think is the way Danielle also took it, is this song is a sweeping narrative about the dangers of hubris, its human costs, its ultimate doom folly, and what happens in its wake. So it's a deep song. It's deeper than you would think. On the surface, mm-hmm. it's like, hey, this fucking wizard, he's trying to fly, and he freaking dies.
Awesome. Like,
so awesome, man. I can't even tell you.
Mm-hmm. If you take it that way, it's still dope.
Oh yeah, it's dope either way. Either way you take it. So I got to talk about the album cover too. The album's really awesome. It's a rainbow that is coming out of like the ocean or the sea, and the sea is rough and wavy, and there's this giant hand that like grabbing the middle of the rainbow. As if they're, you know, kind of rising out of the ashes, or in that case rising out of the ocean. So, it's a really cool album cover. It's pretty metal. You know, and it's, and I don't mean this to offend anybody, but for having a rainbow on it, it's really fucking badass. So,
well, I wanted to say before we move off of this song,
the end where Dio is just like belting out. There's like a line that he says a couple of times where he says, "My eyes are bleeding and my heart is leaving here, but it's not home." Like he says that and he just like is just belting it. And it's the song. Yeah. It's just like it ties everything all together. And it's just if you're going to listen to a song on this album, it's 100% this one.
Oh, yeah. So what's what part are we playing, Danielle?
So just the last like part of that song, kind of like Michael was referring to, where he's just like going off vocally. I'd say the last like minute and a half of that song is so strong. And the strings, like my brain was exploding. And I just want to listen to that entire string section 27 times.
Before we get into our final track, I got the excerpt from Rolling Stone's list that I mentioned, that where this was listed as the 48th greatest heavy metal album of all time out of 100. And here's what it says. Unhappy with Deep Purple's increasingly funk-orientated direction, Ritchie Blackmore left his band in 1974 and formed Rainbow with Ronnie James Dio. And with Rising, Rainbow's second LP, they produced an album that rivaled, some would even say surpassed, Purple's finest work. Everybody who's heard it thinks it's my best playing in a long time, which I suppose is a compliment, the famously testy guitarist remarked in 1976. At the time of the album's release, then again, what do they know? But it didn't take a musicologist to appreciate the quasi-mystical power of Tarot Woman, which featured an unexpectedly futuristic-sounding synth intro from Tony Carey, the arena-ready boogie of Starstruck, the twin Tolkien-esque epic Stargazer and A Light in the Black, or the fiery dynamic fashion in which Blackmore and Co. dished them out. Sadly, Rising would mark Rainbow's artistic peak, as Blackmore would soon steer the band in a more commercially orientated direction. He was perturbed that he wasn't being played on the radio and decided to go a different route, bassist Jimmy Bain lamented to Classic Rock in 2014. He didn't think we were going to get successful because Rising was too heavy.
Damn.
So he was wrong. I was just gonna throw that out there. Richie, you a god, but you were wrong.
Sounds like he didn't glean much off of the stories of Hubris and Stargazer.
Yeah, right? Did you read the lyrics? That brings us to the finale. I'm sad that we're already here. But this is also great. This is six songs on this album, and this is a prototype that metal bands would follow. And I've always preferred metal albums as a whole that had eight songs on them around that. That's like the magic number, 6 to 8 songs. And I think because they're briefer, it's easier to absorb the albums. They're more efficient. You're trimming the fat, and you can kind of, I don't know. You'd have to look at all the bands that Rolling Stone had on this list and see how long all those track listings were. So anyway, if for whatever reason, it just ends up being shorter songs on metal albums, the metal album itself usually ends up being better. This is just a running theory that I'm talking out loud. Anyway, A Light in the Black, Danielle.
Yeah. So this was, I'm actually really proud of myself because I was like, is this song like a part two to Stargazer where like it picks up where it left off kind of thing? And it was. So I'm really proud of myself for picking up on that. I liked this song. Verse two was so beautiful. I'm just going to read a part that really stuck out to me because I loved verse two. It says, always looking down, lost but never found. Eyes to look but not to see. All my life, it seems, just a crazy dream. Reaching for somebody's star like an open door that you've passed before but you never had the key. I was like, wow, that's really deep and beautiful. And I listened to that multiple times. It's just so beautiful. I think the lead guitar in the song was crazy good. It just drove really hard. And this was another song that lasted a long time. And the electric guitar solo in the middle went on for like 4 minutes. And I was like, I actually started falling asleep. I'm not kidding, which I know you guys are going to be upset at me for. But I actually was like nodding off and was like, whoa, okay, stay with it. Also, Chardonnay was involved, so we'll start there. But this song was a great ending to the album, I thought. And really, I think a beautiful resolution to it. And the scale build to like the just like the crash out at the end. There's the slam on the cymbals. I screamed. I was like, that was so good. And I rewound to listen to it again. So yeah, I really liked it. It was a beautiful song and it ended super strong.
Michael?
I was thinking about ways that you could end this album after, like, obviously like Stargazer might be, it might be okay to end on Stargazer, but like if you didn't, what's the right choice? And I think the, like, up-tempoed nature of A Light in the Black with like these insane solos is, I mean, probably the right choice. You can't end with two slower songs, right?
Sure.
So, I think A Light in the Black is a great way to end this album following Stargazer. And the, for me, like this big long instrumental section in the middle of the song was perfect. I enjoyed it. And there's even like a keyboard solo that gets in there and lots of dual leads on the guitar solo. And it's just like, it was almost like this free bird ending to the album with just insane instrumentals back and forth.
And the production is so tight on this song. Like the production is unreal too. That stuck out to me for sure as well.
There was one song in particular, and I think it might be this one that has a lot of doubling of Dio's vocals, where he's like, it's like this really tight harmony that he's got going for most of the song. And I think it's this one, and I really dig into that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think where the disagreement is, I guess, if you want to call it that, is that, and I think this is just something that metalheads are known for that a lot of genres don't get into. One of Tom Petty's famous lines is, don't bore us, get to the chorus. So with metalheads, we love the instrumentals, guitar, the keyboard, the drums, they're king. And sometimes the vocals are almost secondary. Dio's a legendary vocalist, so his vocals really elevate the work in ways that another vocalist, you put them in there and it doesn't. So I'm not taking away from Dio at all. I just know that metal's always been a genre that lets the vocals take a break, I guess, and the instrumentals get their moment.
Yeah, certainly guitar forward, you know, like,
yeah.
They have their time to shine, that's for sure.
Yeah, right. So it's like, you know, Dio's rocking out and Richie's like, and whoever the lead guitarist is, I can't remember his name, but they're both like, hey, let us get in on this action. The keyboard guy's like, hey, I can play too, you know? I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a fitting end to the album as well. Upbeat, fast riff, that's, again, very metal riff, very upbeat, almost thrashy in a way, prototypical in that way. I know that's my favorite word today, but when we're talking about these albums, that's really what comes to mind.
It's what they are.
Yeah. So, Yeah, it's a fitting end. And like, I think Michael said it great, and I didn't really think about it this way until you said it. I don't know how else you would have ended this album. You could have ended it on Stargazer, but I don't think, well, first, lyrically, it doesn't make sense, but putting A Light in the Black, after, well, let's see, after Do You Close Your Eyes would have made no sense. It's almost two upbeat songs.
Yep.
So if you're just looking at it from an instrumental standpoint, Stargazer is like that breath before, you know, before we speed up for a little bit. It concludes the epic story introduced in Stargazer. The slaves find it hard to believe that after following the wizard for many years, building a tower from which he could fly and reach the stars, he lies dead on the sand. They can't find any immediate purpose to their lives. They don't know what to do with their freedom. Finally, there can be two interpretations about the end of the story. A, the light in the black symbolizes hope, where there shouldn't be any. The slaves all realize they are free to go back to their homes, which from which they were absent almost a lifetime. Or B, since they were already living under harsh conditions, they finally died shortly after the wizard. The light in the black could symbolize that after all they went through, they managed to find eternal life up in the sky, like some kind of heaven. This is backed by the fact that the narrator says, "I found my way back home to the sky." And then he remarks that he can now see the star the wizard wanted to reach, possibly from up close if he's really dead and in heaven. So, yeah, a couple ways to interpret it. I would say take it as you will. But yeah, guys, we've wrapped up Rainbow's Rising album. Truly a lot of fun. Closing thoughts. I want closing thoughts from you, Danielle. We'll all give our closing thoughts on the album.
Okay. I am going to go back to something you said earlier, which is like the fact that this album is short and sweet. That really was great for me. One of the issues I had with Paranoid was just the lengthy intros and outros. Which I think a lot of people probably appreciate about it, but was a struggle for me personally. And this album didn't have as much of that, so it was kind of a nice change of pace. I loved going back and forth between storytelling in first person and storytelling in first person, never really letting you adjust to where you are. I thought that was really interesting storytelling and musical writing. It's just a really descriptive album, and I love having vivid pictures. So that was really wonderful for me. Some of it felt for me like contemporary poetry, where you like you're getting some Ginsberg action, where I don't know if you guys know who Allen Ginsberg is, but he's a poet, and you're like, I know you're saying something. I don't know what you're saying. Like, good on you. I have no idea what you're talking about. So sometimes it felt that way just because I wasn't able to connect with it. Certainly the pictures were crisp, but I didn't always know where I fit in them. And so, yeah, that was me trying to resonate with it. And sometimes I was able to, which was really strong. But I really enjoyed this album. I'm really glad you picked it. It's not what I expected. I do have a quick question. What makes this a metal album and not just a rock and roll album?
Well, first off, we're in the era, like I said, that's primordial. So metal really hasn't been, I think it's been used as a word at this point, but the definitions of the genre and what makes something metal haven't been defined yet when this album is made. So not only does it carry influences from some rock and roll bands. Example is Do You Close Your Eyes, and the fact that Ritchie Blackmore played in Deep Purple, who has one of the most iconic rock and roll riffs of all time. But what makes this metal to me is the way in which the riffs are written. Like Stargazer, that's not a rock and roll riff. That's what I meant to say. That's a metal riff to me. It's a doomy vibe. It's a longer song. I think it's the topics too. It's about fantastical things. It's not about like, hey, you know, like, hey, good looking, you know, although there's Do You Close Your Eyes, but even that I think is a different take on the stereotypical rock and roll song about finding a girl, and whatever. So to me, it's the lyrical content. It's the vocal delivery. It's how some of the riffs are definitely more edgy and dangerous and not like just made for radio. I don't know. Michael, do you have a good answer? I don't have a great answer.
Certainly, like, it was because, like you were talking about, it's all like this early, early prototypical metal. Like, this was retroactively, I think, deemed metal, probably.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I don't know at the time when they wrote it, they're like, we're writing a metal album. I don't think that was necessarily the case. But yeah, if you were going to get into it, I was going to specifically say the imagery of the album and the subject matter on specifically Stargazer and A Light in the Black. Like, that to me makes it metal, paired with the riffage and the vocal delivery.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think just rock and roll has kind of a sex appeal. That's the best way I could put it. And metal really doesn't. You know, I feel like rock and roll has, they both contain bluesy elements, both genres. But it's just the way they go about using those bluesy influences. And I think, you know, Michael said it best. It's the subject matter and the way the vocals are delivered. So
cool.
Michael, did you say your closing thoughts?
No, what's your,
what's like, your all around thoughts?
Like I said earlier, like this album grew on me. The first time I heard it, I wasn't quite sure, especially the first four songs, like Stargazer and A Light in the Black. Like I immediately liked the other four songs. I was a little like leery on, but you know, listening to it over and over and over again over the last week, the album has like really grown on me, and I'm going to say like almost all of these songs are going to end up in some sort of like regular rotation. I was impressed by, I don't think that there's many songs anymore about like specifically like wizards and stuff. I know it was like influential early, but there's not many, like you don't hear many metal songs about, except for of course like power metal and specific genres where it's the, like the, that's their shtick, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But it was really cool to hear like a, I don't want to say power metal isn't serious, but a like serious and artistic approach to those sorts of subjects.
Yeah. Right. And yeah. Metal's missing that. Metal's missing that for sure.
Yeah. And that's something that I'm going to take away from this album. And I can easily recommend this album to anyone.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, call it sacrilege, but I enjoyed this more than Paranoid. This is a fun album, and it introduced a lot of the light elements that make metal an entertaining genre, not only a spooky genre and kind of, you know, the one that everybody looks down upon, the underdog genre, but it was just a fun album. And like I've said a million times, it's introduced fantasy elements that many nerds like Michael and I can latch on to. Like, metal is a nerdy thing. I don't care what you say. Like, most people who enjoy metal, I got to do a survey because I keep saying this, but I think they're nerds.
So, in my personal experience.
Yeah, that's my hypothesis. So where Black Sabbath brought the dark and the grim and the gothic and the horrifying elements, Dio and Rainbow brought the epic, grandiose, and upbeat elements. This, I would also recommend this to anybody. It's a joy. It's quick. It doesn't even take that long to listen to. And you can repeat listen to it. And like Michael, you'll probably have that experience where it grows on you, because I also experienced that. So like I said, would recommend it to anybody. So I got a couple closing questions for Danielle here.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Okay. First one is Dio or Ozzy? Who are you taking?
Dio, for sure.
Do you have any specific reason?
He's a crazy vocalist. Like, Ozzy can't touch him vocally. That guy mm-hmm. can sing for days.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Michael?
I'm Dio. Like, I'm not a huge Ozzy fan.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
like, to me, Ozzy doesn't have. I don't know, apart from like the Prince of Darkness and all of the doom and gloom stuff that he introduced. Like, I don't like, you know, call me a heretic, but I don't really know what he brings to the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Ozzy is a. I don't know. Ozzy's like a vibe. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
Whereas Dio's like a full blown, like, he's the real deal. He's a metal god. Like, Ozzy is also a metal god. They're both going to always be viewed that way. You know, Ozzy was part of the band that created the genre, that helped create the genre. Mm-hmm. And Ozzy was blessed with a great guitarist in Randy Rhoads and then a great guitarist in Zakk Wylde. I don't want to say Ozzy's just been lucky his whole career, but like, he's had great guitarists help him out.
You're right. I mean, yeah, definitely having those guys backing you up helps.
And you know, Dio had Ritchie Blackmore, but who did Dio have after that? I can't name the guitarists.
No. Yeah, I mean, well, you talk about like...
He had Tony Iommi.
Right.
Like when he joined Black Sabbath, but that's different to me.
But Ozzy's always going to be the vocalist of Black Sabbath, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So... I personally vibe with Dio more too. I think Ozzy is a charming person, and it's hilarious that you can't hear what he's saying. And I love his stage antics, and he has wrote some endearing songs that I enjoy. But that being said, you know, if we're just picking vocalist versus vocalist, I'm taking Dio. Mm-hmm. All right, Danielle, I think I know the answer to this for you, Danielle, not sure about Michael, but are you taking Paranoid, the first album we did, or Rising?
Rising.
Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. Expand upon that?
I didn't know if you wanted me to or not. I don't know. I'm not sure if this is rapid fire, if this is...
Oh, no. We don't do anything rapid here.
Great. Love it.
We do. We actually have done rapid fire, though. I'm lying. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Elaborate, please.
Yes. I just enjoyed this one more. I had fun in almost every song where there's some songs in Paranoid that I'll leave... In that time I listened to that album.
Yeah.
They didn't resonate with me the same way. Every song on this album pretty much is fun, and I love to have fun when I'm listening to an album. And I just bopped more. It was like, it certainly had more of a vibe to it. And it's something, there's some songs that I could see myself listening to again for sure.
What about you, Michael?
I'm thinking, man, this is actually a really hard question. I don't, because of like recency bias, I need to like try to take that into account, but I don't want to like overestimate the power of recency bias, you know? So I think at its peak, Paranoid is better, but I think overall, like, because of how tight Rising is, like, I think it's a like a denser album in terms of quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, man, I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't think I can answer it right now.
Well, I don't think I can either. I was going to say, like, I don't want to disrespect, and it is tough with recency bias. So Paranoid definitely is more popular. We'll say that, right?
Oh yeah.
I
mean, yeah, for sure.
I don't think many could just name Rising and list all the tracks. I think Rising is a hidden gem. Paranoid's the one we've always known to be there, but it's Paranoid is an excellent album. Okay. We're talking about two great albums here. Rising is a little more upbeat. So it kind of depends on where you fall on the scale of what mood you're in. You know, are you looking for something a little more gloomy? Or are you looking mm-hmm. for a fun upbeat album? I do like that Rising is a quicker listen, and Paranoid, I think, had quite a few, like what, 11 tracks or something on it.
Yeah, something like that.
In the end, I'm just talking like a politician right now and not answering anything. I'm answering my own question with questions. I think what you said is the truth. I think at its peak and its power of influence, Paranoid's the better album, but Rising is not far behind, and it's a fun listening. It's dense and it's full of like pure quality, and Dio rocks. I love Dio.
Yeah.
He means a lot to the genre. So, anything else that from either of you before I move on to wrap this baby up?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
All right, guys. Thanks again for joining. According to a non-metalhead, Danielle is our resident non-metalhead. So, we appreciate it
for a little while longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get you.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Eventually we'll have to rename it, or we'll have to find another non-metalhead, because she'll just proclaim her love for the genre. She'll wake up with like the rock fists and be like, what?
Oh Lord.
You'll wake up with like a black nail polish on. Be like, what happened?
where am I?
Oh my gosh.
So anyhow, please be kind to her. You can disagree with her. But disagree with her politely, please, and with a good argument if you do want to talk some smack. So anyway, we will continue to do this. We're trying to do According to a Non-Metalhead once a month. And a non-metalhead is somebody who doesn't listen to metal, guys. I had to explain that, and I just want you to know that that's what that means. So
we thought it might be self-explanatory.
I thought it was pretty clear, but people didn't know. Well, let's just leave it at that.
There was at least one person.
Yeah, that was wondering what a non-metalhead was, and usually when you put "non" in front of something, means that they're not of that. So
it means not not.
Yeah, yeah. The opposite of a metalhead, which Danielle is very much the opposite of a metalhead. Although I feel like she's been surprised by what she's discovered so far.
For sure.
And I hope it quickly changes. I hope she's disgusted by the next one.
It'll happen.
Get there eventually. We will definitely get there. Yes. There is going to be a limit to how much she could tolerate. Oh, by the way, Danielle, what are you ranking this one? 0 out of 10. Last one you gave a 65%, which is not possible. It's not possible on that scale. So let's give it percentage. That's your thing. That's what you wanted it to be. Yep. So what's your percentage of this album? Last album was 65%. What are you giving this one? As a resident non-metalhead.
As a resident non-metalhead, this album gets a solid 80%.
Wow.
Nice.
All right. Dio is smiling in his grave and up in the skies.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, we are going to continue to do this once a month. We're doing this chronologically, so you can either expect a album from the late 70s or the early 80s. And I don't know which yet, because I haven't selected the album, but you can definitely expect that it's going to be the iconic albums, because obviously we want to show her the best of class, right? We don't want to show her some obscure Merciful Fate or Venom album. It's got to be no disrespect to those bands. It's just we want to show her the big stuff first. If this continues to catch on, then we'll show her all those nooks and crannies that you guys are like, why aren't you showing her that? You know, so expect another big name. You just think about it. I'm not going to tell you. Do some research. Remember that you can find us at supermetalworld.com. We got a lot of other podcasts on there and articles for you to check out. Share it with a friend. Spread the word. We're on Facebook. Search Super Metal World. Give us a like or follow. You can stream us on everything that you stream music. Please go to iTunes right now, now that you're done with this podcast and haven't tuned out and you're still listening to my voice. Please go to iTunes, rate and review, give us 5 stars, write a review. It can even just be the Rock Fists. It can be Dio. It can be Run with the Wolf. Please, somebody say Run with the Wolf as a review.
That would be amazing.
I will know that you're existing and that I matter in this universe. If I don't see Run with the Wolf sometime in 2019, I may have an existential crisis.
Oh, Lord.
My life revolves around your compliments.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely no problems here.
Definitely, I don't have an issue. It's not something I'm seeing counseling for. But I do need it. I do need to see Run with the Wolf.
just hitting those refresh, hitting the refresh button on the iTunes, iTunes charts.
Every morning, probably 20 times, I'm hitting that refresh waiting. And now I'm going to be waiting for Run with the Wolf. I want it to be like this. Run, all caps. Run, period, with, period, the, period, wolf, period. Okay? And if you got a wolf emoji or a dog emoji, that'd be kind of cool too. Okay. People have definitely stopped listening at this point. I think I've hit it all. Oh, yeah. We have a Gmail, supermetalworld@gmail.com for your questions, your concerns, your suggestions. If you're an underground band, unsigned band, send us your music. We'd love to hear it. As always, horns high.
Horns high.